I will not waver. I will not walk away. I will get on with the job and I will finish the work.
Hello and welcome to Politics Weekly. I'm Tom Clark. Well, we're trying to make sense of it like I'm sure you're trying to make sense of it. And to be honest, we don't really know what's going on. But let's recap some of the things that we do know. Six cabinet ministers have walked. Labour's polling what might be its lowest national vote share since the First World War. Haven't had time to check, but I think that's right. And of course, we're all looking forward to more election results coming out on Sunday night when the European papers are counted. And at the heart of it all, of course, is the big question. Gordon Brown, will he stay or will he go? Views on the answer to that question are changing by the minute. Just as we're going on air, we're getting news that another minister, Caroline Flint, has decided to pack it all in. So, the kaleidoscope's in flux, but that's not going to stop us from trying to see some patterns. Joining me around the table to do this are three of The Guardian's top pundits, Jonathan Friedland, Jenny Russell, and Julian Glover. So, Johnny, Gordon Brown, will he stay or will he go?
Well, as of this recording, as they say in American broadcasting, it looks like he's survived. He's managed, it seems, to have outwitted those who wanted to unseat him. Now, that may change if the resignation that came on Thursday night, straight after the polling of James Purnell, if that was followed by another targeted assassination resignation, in other words, a resignation aimed directly at Gordon Brown. There have been all these people leaving, but they have not echoed the language that James Purnell used, saying, Prime Minister, it's time for you to step aside. So John Hutton, fellow Blairite, has left, but he didn't leave with that kind of language. And therefore, while that's the case, Gordon Brown survives. Also, while those who are walking and rebelling are only confined to the narrow Blair faction, or at least you can present it that way, Brown can survive. And finally, once it's not one of the big people. So in other words, if Peter Mandelson or David Miliband or Alistair Darling had gone, then you'd say Brown's days and hours were over. But I don't think we're in that position as of this moment we're speaking now.
Jenny, do you accept the idea that the rebellion, such as it is confined to a faction and that might just allow Gordon Brown to squeak through?
I think it's true that many of the people who've gone could be identified as Blairites, but I don't think it's factional. I think that is a very easy way for Gordon Brown to dismiss something which is really fundamental. I was talking to people who you would expect to always to have been loyal to Brown on Wednesday, and they were saying, quite frankly, that it was time for him to go, but they won't say it in public. And I think you can't interpret James Purnell's resignation as anything other than a principled stand. He doesn't want to be leader. He had nothing to gain from doing this, except that he actually believed that the worst situation for the party and the country was for Brown to remain. And I'd say that's a widespread view behind the scenes, but most people are far too cowardly to come out and say so.
I think you could say that for Purnell, but what about Hazel Blears throwing her toys out of the pram just before the polls open?
Oh, sure. I think that was purely self-interest, but I don't think that you can characterise some of the other resignations in that way. I mean, she was in a terrible situation anyway, and clearly it was malice against Brown. She wasn't thinking about the Labour Party. If she had been, then she would have waited until after 10 p.m. But I think the point about this is that there is such widespread disillusion, and yet people just don't want to be to have their necks up on the front line. I was talking to two junior ministers on Wednesday who said, well, I don't feel it's my position, although I think the party would be radically better if he left. It's not my position to push it. It's the cabinet ministers who ought to be doing it.
And Julian, what about you? Will he stay or will he go?
I think the question is whether it's a slow death or a quick one. Who the assassins are is a secondary question. The worst is that Gordon Brown will lose the election very badly in a year. We can pull back a bit closer than that. I suspect he isn't going to go today. He probably won't go by Monday. He might go in 2 or 3 weeks' time when this new kind of cabinet of nobodies and has-beens and resigned people turns out to be rather useless. He may go in the summer. He may just stay all the way to the polling day. But it's all over for the idea of a capable Brown government that can do the three things he set out in his statement.
I think you're so right that it's all over, the idea of a capable government. I've just been watching this press conference with Brown and it's absolutely shameless. He was asked point blank by Tom Bradbury from ITN, Chancellor, Prime Minister, can you say that you did not want to sack your Chancellor? And he said, no, no. And he said, no, again, when asked again by Bradbury. And as Bradbury said, every single person sitting in that room knew that he was planning to sack the Chancellor and that other people had been asked to take his job. And yet Brown lied in exactly the same way as he did when he lied about his reasons for not calling an election last year. So his credibility shot. But what I still don't see, Julian, this is what astonishes me, is that nothing seems to shake Brown from his conviction that he must stay on.
Yes, the absolute certainty that he is the man to do it.
And he said it many times just now.
And that's driven partly, of course, by the fact that so far nobody else has said they want the job, and that does help you look like you're the strong guy. I mean, he does sound in that press conference, I thought, like the sort of army leader trying to run the end of a government, holding the radio station as the tanks kind of absolutely near the building, and he's still broadcasting to the nation about the great cultural achievements of the country. And yet you really know it's beginning to crumble, the ceiling's sort of cracking, the dust's falling onto the floor, and yet he's holding out there. And unless someone's brave enough to storm the room, he can stick in it for quite
a
while.
There is another way of putting this, which breaks slightly the cozy consensus from my colleagues here. I mean, firstly, this
cozy,
notion...
we're furious.
The notion that he could have said to Tom Bradbury, yeah, you're quite right, I did want to sack Alistair Darling, but, you know, that's life. He couldn't do that, right? He's made a huge mistake in damaging the credibility of his chancellor. That's true. He should have actually unequivocally backed him, even if he was then going to sack him. So that was a mistake, but he had no option but to say, of course.
That's because we think he should have stood down. So
exactly.
Clearly,
that's what I'm saying. He's not credible anymore because you can't stand there once you've got into that corner.
All right. But anyway, he had no option but to do that. I think the thing he demonstrated in the press conference and much more at Prime Minister's questions earlier is tremendous resilience. I mean, it's extraordinary to be able to be in quite as deep a hole as he now is. And yet he does hold on. And he is very, very able at this business of, it's an ugly side of politics, but internal party management. He is better than all his rivals at this. You saw it over the years when the Alan Milburns and the others came up as rivals and he pushed them down. And he's better at it now. He's outmaneuvering them. They have not managed to prize him out. And given that the character of the man, that he won't go unless he's absolutely taken out, he at the moment is ahead of them. And, you know, we can... It's an arresting image, Julian, this idea of the sort of dictator as the radio, as the tanks are coming in. But the reality is he's the Prime Minister unless they get it together to get him out. And so far they have not shown their able to do that.
And that's certainly driven by the fact that they don't have a candidate. So they're not saying, you go, here's the leader. It's a coup without a person in front of it. That's one of the reasons the plot has been so badly handled, to the extent there is a plot at all, that nobody's actually coordinating it because nobody wants to be leader. They're all hoping somebody else is. I mean, we know that's not quite the case, but it seems to be the job. Everybody wants Gordon to stop, but nobody else to get.
But Johnny, he's held the cabinet down for now. He's avoided anyone else throwing their hat into the ring. Who knows what will happen when the European results come in. But isn't there a dynamic at work with this letter that's circulating on the back benches? At some point, if there are 70, 80 or even 100 names on that, do you think he could still soldier on because he'd say, yes, more than half of the parliamentary party are behind me?
I wouldn't put it past him, actually. Mm. I mean, I think no one knows the rule book better than him. Others would actually say, well, I can now forget the rule book and the technicalities. Clearly, I've lost the support. I just don't think that's really him.
No.
Partly because he knows they do have this weakness of not having a rival candidate. If there was another person who was threatening him, then I think that would be different. He knows that there is actually divisions here. The people signing that letter, for example, some are on, as far as we understand, the far left of the party. Some are on the, you know, the uber Blairite wing. They could not unite around a single candidate. There's people who want Alan Johnson. There's people who want John McDonnell. So I don't think, you know, and he knows that as long as they don't have a single candidate, he's there. Look, what I don't want to walk away with is anybody to have the impression that I don't think Brown is hugely weakened by this week's events. Of course he is. Mm. He is hugely weakened. He may even be, as Julian's saying, ultimately fatally weakened. He's certainly weakened his Chancellor, and that is very bad for the running of the country and for the economy. But I also think those who are his enemies come out of this week weakened because they've used several of their weapons and they have misfired. So James Purnell, I agree, it was principled. He didn't coordinate with anyone else. It was tainted. It was tainted by the fact that Hazel Blears had gone the day before. Activists are livid that she did it the eve of polling. He did it after the day they've been out campaigning. This has gone wrong so far.
But when else could he do it? I mean, he waited until the polls closed.
Yeah,
what could be more responsible?
Well, I think just a very small point, but I think it's symbolic, and I've noticed how people have reacted to it. He should have just announced it 10:01 p.m. Very straight announcement to PA. Have started talking
this
to the
is
time and the sun.
The detail makes a difference, but in the end, it's going or not going that's the key thing. I think we need to maybe pull back from the party a bit here, because one of the dangers of this debate, I mean, journalists are beginning to suffer from it too, and certainly Labour is it's terribly internalised. So we're now talking, who are his enemies? It hasn't occurred to any of us around the table, he has enemies outside the Labour Party, and particularly ones called Conservatives, who are going to be in power quite soon, and they are so happy today. They've done pretty well in the elections. They've not done brilliantly, but they've done slightly better in quite a lot of places than they thought they were. They've won some counties they didn't expect to get. But my goodness, they're looking at the Labour Party and smiling. They think they've got a Chancellor the Prime Minister doesn't like. They've got a Prime Minister, the Chancellor doesn't... A Cabinet, you know, most of the people in the Cabinet, some people here, we didn't even know were Labour MPs. They've got a Bob Ainsworth pops up. What was he? Everyone has to look him up in a book. It's not credible in any way. And the Conservatives are delighted. The Liberal Democrats can position themselves as the progressive force that's, you know, pro real change and quite nice to vote for and not doing that badly. So the real enemies of Labour are not
this faction or that faction,
they're the Tories.
But I do think that's the whole core of the problem. I was talking to a Labour strategist this week who was saying, look, the point is just how do we die less badly? And he was saying if we carry on as we are now, then we're going to end up with under 20% at the next general election. And if we were to get a new leader, then the possibility is that we might climb towards 30%, and then we might be in hung parliament territory. So no one imagines that this is about how does Labour win. It's about how does Labour avoid electoral annihilation.
I think that's exactly right, what Jenny said, and that was the plotters, if you like, the anti-Brown camp's most potent argument. This is about fending off wipeout and losing with some kind of dignity so that we can come back. What has blown a hole in that, and has scared off a whole lot of people, and I think in the last 24 hours, is that the notion of changing the leader has become soul-fused inseparably from early election. The belief now is, maybe this is a successful bit of spin by the Brown camp, but now they think if we get rid of Brown, we will immediately face the voters, and my God, we know we'll have a wipeout. At least, who knows, a miracle might come along, and it's uncertain for May. But what we do know is if there are an election now dominated by expenses, we will be annihilated. And they have come to the view, change the leader, there has to be an immediate election, and they're scared of it.
Brown's not explicit about that, is he?
No, I don't think he's had to do it. I think
He had Liam Byrne out spinning from last night. And you're absolutely right, it was a lethal bit of spin because it does discourage everyone else, and it's complete rubbish. There would be no obligation on a new leader to do that. They could come in, they could say, right, I want 3 or 4 months to set up my programme, to make some essential changes in the way Parliament operates, and then I'll stand in front of the electorate. You could have an election in the autumn.
More than that,
it doesn't have to follow.
An attempt by Brown to hold out till the very bitter end next year, I think, may not last. It may not work. I don't know that that's actually going to be sustainable. The election may be quicker than people think, even with Brown as leader. I'm not sure going much beyond October now can... Labour will look like they've taken the country hostage and they're just sort of saying, we're never going to leave until the police come.
I couldn't agree with you more, except that what are the forces, you think, since this has failed in the last 24 hours, that will make that happen? Because I think your analogy of Brown in the bunker is absolutely right. He's going to be standing there as the concrete is crashing down his head, saying, I am the right leader for the times and the country, and everyone will soon recognise this.
Well, I mean, legally, we won't get the Queen just dissolving Parliament, as various Mail Group newspapers would like, although, you know, that will certainly be called for again, I think. It will be very hard if he just sits there and refuses to call a general election. Mm. I mean, the meetings with the Queen are going to be quite uncomfortable for him over the next year.
You think he could depend on Her Majesty? But
will be extraordinary for this government just to sit there against the will of everybody.
No, I think you're both getting a bit carried away, and I think it's partly the events of this week that have done this. Bear in mind, and again, I picked this up just speaking to people yesterday, they've drawn back. A lot of people who have wanted to give Labour a kicking in the end actually came back and voted Labour yesterday, and people I was speaking to, and it was very interesting what they said. They said that, you know, it's true, Gordon Brown's weakness is a leader, but he is being treated as if he's some hugely evil man. I mean, in a way, you're analogous to dictators. He's not Richard Nixon. He's not Pol Pot. They think he's a decent man who is not very good at being a leader.
Decency. I mean, Brown and his campaign of smears and undermining is absolutely unparalleled.
A lot of the cabinet action is that they know the closer you get to Gordon Brown, the more you know that that's what you've just said about him is not true.
There's nothing decent about Gordon Brown. I can't allow this myth to continue. He stands up and perpetuates it today. On the very morning that Barry Sherman, who's a decent man, says that his parliamentary party, his constituency party, rung this morning and his chairman was told to get him into line and undermine him, which they proceeded to do simply because for the first time in his life he said, I don't think Brown is ruling in the interests of the country. And this is what Brown does again and again. He is not a decent man. He may be a very clever politician, but let's not pretend it's decency.
No, the point I was actually making was how he's seen outside. I think people in the Westminster Village and certainly the press who have experience of all these briefings see it that way. I think outside there is this different image of him. People think he's in some ways hapless and overtaken by events. They do not think he's committed some terrible evil, that he has to be driven out and the Queen has to depose him as Prime Minister. And it's an over-fevered view that we're getting in the Hot House that says that.
That's definitely true. In the polls?
I think a lot of the public, even people who haven't voted for him, feel sorry for him. They see him a bit as a sort of lumbering bear who's been goaded by rather unpleasant people.
Well, isn't that very clever PR on his part?
It is PR, but it is also that people feel sorry for somebody in trouble and who stands up and says, I'm trying to do good for my country. Yeah. Nonetheless, they don't really want him to be Prime Minister.
No, that's probably right.
This question about decency and integrity, Jenny, you're not a fan of Gordon Brown, you haven't been for a long time. Mm. What's decent about James Pennell sending a letter out saying, I think you should resign, with no argument, no vision, no policy, apart from, because otherwise we're going to do very badly? Isn't he the one who looks very narrowly partisan?
No, I think not. I think the point about Pennell is that he wanted his message to be a very simple one. He wasn't going into detail to Brown, although he would be perfectly capable of doing so. He has very clear ideas about which direction the country should go in. But I don't think he thought this was the moment to start having an argument about detail. His message was, I have always been committed to the Labour Party, as you have been, and it's neither in the Labour Party's interest nor the country's that you continue. Because he fundamentally believes that you ought to have a Labour Party with good values and policies running the country because it's better for the country. I think that's a very legitimate thing to argue and a brave thing to argue.
Well, thanks very much, everyone. I think we need to wrap it up now, not least because we need to go and find out what's going on and then write tomorrow's newspaper. But we'll be back next week, regardless of whether or not Gordon Brown is. Thanks very much.